prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, September 2nd, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Hey, did you miss me?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. What else are you going to say?
The audience, well, exactly. What am I going to say?
Oh, man, what are you doing back? We were having fun without you.
Yeah, well,
the cat's away.
You were having fun without us, too.
Well, the cat's away, the mice will play. I get it. Hey.
The cats will play, too. You know, the cat leaves the mice behind. The mice say, yay. The cat says, yay. You know?
But we still did a great job for all of our clients who purchased gold and silver, and I do appreciate it, and I thank you for the support. Gold, however, you know, what can I say? Usually when I go away, gold increases. I didn't expect it to drop $22 today on my return, so perhaps I should go away again.
I can. The problem is maybe it's not going
I have to come back something.
It comes back. It's the coming back. That might be the problem. So if you go away.
I'll just stay away. Yeah. Anyway, no, I couldn't do that. I like my job. I like this. I don't like gold being down $22 today at $12.65, but if you're in the market to be buying gold and silver from Discount Gold and Silver Trading, today's one of the days to do it. Silver is down 31 at $19.25. Platinum was down 14 at $14.15. Palladium was also down $22 at $886. So the white metals got hammered pretty good. The dollar was way over 83 for a short period of time. It looks like it's come off its high, 0.19, at 82.97. And, of course, there was a lot of pressure on crude oils, down almost $3 today at 93.07. Paper markets today, we have a little bit of pressure on the Dow. And then, you know, 31 points, big deal, 17,067. The NASDAQ was up, though, at 45.98, along with the S&P being down basically a point. So it was really no change at 2002. And the 10-year yield is ticking back up this morning. That was into the low, or I should say the high, 2.5. I think I saw 2.37 or something like that. Now it's 2.42% on the 10-year yield. And let's see. There were some reports that came out today, Al.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. We go over the reports and everything, but sometimes you wonder what's the point of going over the reports because everything is so just, you know, manipulated. So you did have the dollar was stronger, and it's basically a 13-month high. And, of course, we've seen the crude oil prices just sank today.
What do you think is going on with crude oil? Do you think the prices are manipulated, or is that a free market price?
No, there isn't anything that's a free market price. And no, there isn't anything.
So why is crude oil down?
Gasoline prices really haven't fallen to the degree of crude oil. Personally, I believe it's a manipulated market. I thought that they were going to run it. I heard discussions and I followed it and they were going to run it. And they did, to the point where they said they were going to, and they were going to let it drop down here. They make money on these markets riding it up, and they make money on these markets riding it down. And to me, that's what they do, because really, with all the turmoil in the world, you would think you would see a little bit of, the pressure on crude oil should have stayed at least above 100.
That may be exactly why crude oil is falling. I suggested this to Frank when he was on co-hosting while you were gone.
Who?
Frank.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, all right.
Uh-huh.
Melody didn't remember.
I didn't remember it.
The crew has disappeared. Here's my theory. If the market's being manipulated, who's being hurt by low prices for crude oil? Who's the number one exporter of crude oil? Russia, I believe. This is a way of taking a big bite out of Russia right now. I'm not saying that's necessarily the reason, but that is an interesting possibility. If the price of crude oil is falling, then Russia's gross income as a nation has got to be diminishing. And I have to wonder how much pressure that puts on them.
I think there's multiple reasons. You also have the U.S.
It's not just one reason.
You also have the U.S. that is producing more crude, more oil, and we're beginning to export it after a ban of 30, 40 years. It's certainly a small step. And certainly I think there's many factors that could involve, and that could really be one also. But then you have to deal with the Saudis. I mean, it's the Saudis that pretty much set the price of oil. So, I mean, it's,
that's the theory. Well, maybe they're in on this. I don't know who's setting the price of oil. It's not me, that's for sure. But I look at it and I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is consistent with sanctions on Russia. And this one might be one that bites. A lot of the other sanctions may be annoyance, may be merely an annoyance. The falling price of crude, that can be serious. So, anyway, just a theory, and I was just curious. I thought.
I think it's certainly a possibility, but I also, what's $10? I mean, yeah, it's a big percentage.
It's 14. It's 14. It was up to 107, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. So it's off $14 a barrel right now.
I believe they run markets up and they run them down and they take advantage, just like they do with the currencies. Now you're seeing the pressure on the euro. You see our dollar going up. Is the people really like the dollar? Are their fundamentals for the U.S. dollar stronger than any other currency in the world? No, it's just they'd rather hold the dollar than the euro. I mean, I don't think any of these markets really mean anything anymore. It's just a matter of what's the next best thing to go into so they can make the most money. And I think that that's a big play. It might not be the only play, but I think it's a big play. I mean, we saw the U.S. dollar index. I mean, it's hitting a 13-month high.
I understand.
And, with the oil prices lowering, and certainly we saw the pressure on gold today. And, you know, it was a three-day weekend. It was a fairly quiet three-day weekend considering the previous weeks that we've had, not only here in the States but around the world. So you have the euro that's hitting a yearly low also. So, you know, do they all respond to one another anymore? I think to some degree it's a psychological impact also. So you've got multiple reasons. I don't think we can pinpoint any one influence on much. There's a lot of stuff that's coming out this week.
We can't know unless the people in the positions of power actually just say, here's what we're doing and here's why. So we're not going to know, all right, because they aren't going to tell us. We can sit out here and we speculate, and that's all we can do. But if you believe that the price is being manipulated, it strikes me that this is causing some problems. It's got to be causing problems for Russia. Price of crude is off $14 in a few weeks. It has to make a difference for Russia, and it's got to be one of the sanctions that, again, really sting, compared to the other ones. So, blah, blah, blah.
But you also have the Euro Central Bank, their meeting this week. And they're looking to announce perhaps a fresh stimulus. And they're actually looking to create some sort of a bond purchasing, just like our Federal Reserve did. So, we can go a little bit. Oh, we got a caller.
Yes, Yvonne is on the line.
Yes.
Hello, Yvonne.
Yes, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello. Didn't hear from you a while. But anyway, my comments are, in the direction of Ukraine. It's heating up pretty well from the latest news on CNN and Fox. I listened that they are actually fighting the Russians directly, with also the rebels or separatists, whatever you call them. But I think there is a bigger picture, and it's tied in with ISIS. ISIS is controlled by Middle East powers, such as Saudis, Qataris, Israelis, and so on, who are supplying them with money and, of course, with weapons and so on. I think the central point is Iran, okay? Since they can tie down Russia in Ukraine by war or whatever one can, one can call it, they then can use the corridor which ISIS opened between Saudis and Israel and Syria to Iran, because they control all the large cities like Mosul, Tikrit, and Fallujah, and so on. So they can have a clear sailing through Iraq to Iran. And I was just wondering if this is Ukraine is a sideshow for them to allow the main thrust against Iran. What is your viewpoint on that?
I think these are two largely separate events. I don't think they're orchestrating both of these events to achieve a common. I don't doubt they're trying to exploit both events. The world gives you lemons, you make lemonade as best you can. That's the diplomat's fundamental notion. They try to, profit as much as possible. But I don't think these were intended to be, operating at the same coordinated. I think they're two separate events. One of the things that surprised me about, I've seen a report recently dealing with ISIS, or now IS, I don't know. They changed their name. It was ISIL, ISIS, now perhaps IS. I don't know what their name will be tomorrow. They were apparently started by the CIA, funded by the CIA, maybe not exclusively, but they've derived funding, training, and whatever from the CIA. The object was to use them to overthrow Assad. And I've seen a report that surprised me that much of ISIS is what's left over from the Republican Guard under Saddam Hussein. They are Sunnis who were Iraqis, all right? And they were part of the Republican Guard. They were overthrown and defeated during the
shock and awe that our government hit Iraq with back, 2003? And these are the guys that are left over. And I don't know if that's true or false, but there's something very strange about ISIS. And that is this. We are kind of led to believe that ISIS is just a bunch of guerrillas who just kind of got together and they said, what the heck, let's go raid Iraq. But the truth of the matter is, this entity has to have logistical support. Someone's got to be supplying food and fuel and ammunition and whatever else it takes to keep an army functioning. And they have been almost astonishingly well supported. And this support indicates to me that this is not just a spontaneous movement of a bunch of ragtag ruffians roaming the desert. There's something else going on here. Somebody is supporting ISIS. Somebody's giving them significant money and financial support, and I'm not sure what their reason is, but...
I fully agree with you that they are being supported by some heavyweights or some people with lots of money, like Middle East, Saudi Arabia with Israel, that they are... In fact, Israel and Saudis are joined at the hip. If you study history, you find out that Saudi is originally or eventually came through as a Saudi Arabia under a Jewish control. A Jewish merchant or quite an influential merchant from Iraq actually took over the tribe of Saud, who was the largest tribe, and they destroyed the smaller tribes and thus created Saudi Arabia.
And in what time? In what time frame are we talking about the creation of Saudi Arabia under Jewish control and influence? When do you think this happened?
This happened when Saudis were created.
Yeah, I understand, but we're not talking 1,600 years ago or something. We are talking relatively modern times, true or false. And are we talking before the creation of Israel or afterwards?
This is prior to a few years prior to creation of Israel, probably after the Ottoman Empire, the structure of the Ottoman Empire, which was in...
Then you're saying Saudi Arabia jumped up someplace after World War II. Or excuse me, World War One. Sometime between World War One and World War Two is when you think the Saudis were created. I don't give the Jews credit for doing this. I don't know if that's a true story or conspiracy theory. If it were possible, after Israel was created, I don't know. I might regard that theory with a little more credibility. It may be true. I don't know what the truth of the matter is, Yvonne, but I'm just saying I'd be skeptical of it until I saw some more evidence.
Yeah, well, if you there are some websites which delve into history.
Oh, there's websites that'll tell us about anything you want to know about. All right, little green men, little gray men, tall green men, tall gray men. What size do you prefer? All right, we can give it the size and color, whatever you want. It's when it comes to theories, you know, it's hard to know what the truth is. We know what the opinions are, but trying to figure out the truth is not easily done.
My main point is that I feel that they are tied to a degree where they want to tie down Russia in European theater and allow then the U.S.
You think that if Russia weren't tied down, it would be easier to overthrow Assad in Syria. And do you think that the situation in Ukraine is intended to ease the overthrow of Assad in Syria? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that they are actually looking at Iran. Because
well, I'll tell you what. Well, I understand. All right, Iran is another one sitting on the horizon. That's not there right now. We've got a break. We've got to take some commercial announcements right now, and we will be back in a moment on Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom. I'm Alfred Addis. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. And I don't know, Melody is back from her vacation right now, and I have not yet heard. Do we have a special du jour, Melody? Or do
absolutely. It's a very good special. It's a very simple special, but a very... AU, my favorite coin for small fractional pieces, AU $5 Liberty gold pieces. And we also have 20 pre-1921 Morgan silver dollars. This price includes all your shipping costs for $1,000. It really is a steal. It's almost wholesale in these prices. And they need to give us a call. You need to get some. Great bartering material. It's a great way to preserve your purchasing power. The pre-1921 Morgans, most of them all are dated prior to 1900. You'll get some 1877, some 1880s and 1890s, and they're beautiful coins, very highly sought after. People love them. People prefer these Morgan silver dollars over the peace dollars. For some reason, the way they designed the peace dollars, they just didn't seem to hold up very well under even the few years that they were circulating. But yet the Morgan silver dollars, they've done a very fine job in keeping their design. And these are circulated, but you certainly have very fine points with dates shown and very, very nice coins. And, of course, the AU $5 Liberty gold piece is a pre-1933 gold piece, and you can pick up the complete package with shipping, include shipping, for $1,000. So give us a call. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter, and, of course, you can listen to this program live or listen to the archives at your pleasure. So I'm excited, Al. Yes, gold is down $20 today, but I'm excited because we're going into that time of year, and I think the markets are positioned. Yes, it's an election year, and I've been saying for over a year, you will begin to see things unfold after the election and even up in, you know, maybe the first of the year. And I've always been a firm believer the Republicans don't have a chance. I think it's going to be Democrats all the way. And if that happens, Katie, bar the door.
Oh, I think the Republicans will do okay in this election, and I think they may do well. I think Obama's tainted the situation for Democrats to such a degree. I mean, they're going to have to be able to count
you would
the
think,
votes the
would
same.
You, well, you, that you would be, think.
Yeah, it's harder to fix elections than it is to fix the unemployment rate or the inflation rate. And those numbers are fixable. Elections are a little harder. So,
do we still have our caller or not?
I don't know. Is Yvonne still on the line?
Yeah, I'm still holding. I wasn't sure if I should hang up or not.
I wasn't sure either, but what we'll do, Yvonne, is we're going to operate and assume that what you're trying to communicate is the idea that the ultimate target in the Middle East for ISIS is not Iraq, but Iran. True?
Yes, they are true. I have one thing to throw in. I got some information from an army chaplain who is supposed to be deployed to Iraq end of September, beginning of October. So that kind of indicates that there probably will be some boots on the ground in Iraq.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't doubt that.
No.
They're going to keep clowning around. You know, once you get in for a penny, in for a pound, that's what it comes down to. Once you get involved in these things, how do you get uninvolved? Initially, you start bombing ISIS facilities and say, well, we'll do that. But you quickly start to argue that you really can't do the full job unless you put some boots on the ground, so we'll put a few hundred men on the ground. And then somebody's going to shoot 1, 2, or 10 of those few hundred men, and they're going to say, oh, my gosh, they've shot some of our soldiers. And we've got to send another 1,000 or 5,000 or 20,000. And the whole thing just goes on and on until we go broke, you know, or there's something decisive. But I agree with you that Iran may be the ultimate target in all of this, in part because Syria is Shiite, controlled by a Shiite government. Iraq is controlled by a Shiite government. Iran is controlled by a Shiite government. And ISIS is a Sunni operation. So they're out for anybody. I'm sure they're an equal opportunity invader. They'll invade anybody who's Shiite. So it won't be surprising to see us go after Iran, see ISIS go after Iran. But I don't expect that to start too suddenly. I mean, that's something like 6 months or maybe even a year down the road. They're going to have to succeed in perhaps both Syria and Iraq before they can start to move on Iran, although they might start some guerrilla operations and they might start needling them. But I don't see major attack until sometime down the road and after Iraq has been settled.
Yeah, I don't see ISIS as an actual fighting force or army or whatever. I see them as a guerrilla of highly organized and well directed
I see them as an army. I know that's the way they're presented as guerrillas, but they have had too much success. They've got to have logistical support. They're not just living off the land. All right, something is going on here. What do they do for banking? Somebody is running bank accounts for these people. They're not just running around with a little purse with some change in their purse to see to pay for tomorrow's lunch and dinner or something. They've got bankers that are backing them up someplace. They have bank accounts.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The Saudis and the Israelis and Qataris are joined with ISIS. They created ISIS. And they are doing just what you said, the banking, the logistics, the weaponry, and so on.
Somebody should be able to chase this down. And the fact that it's not, all right, there should be reports on this. Who's their banker? All right, we ought to know that. And the fact that that's not being presented publicly to my knowledge, and who's providing the logistical support and rest of that, the fact that it's not being presented publicly suggests to me that that information is perhaps available, but probably suppressed. They don't want us to know who's really backing these people. But, Yvonne, we got to move on here. We'll have to
talk no problem.
Another day.
I just wanted to finish up on that, my point that there'll be some deployment. All right.
Okay.
Have a good day, both of you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
All right, so what's next, Melody?
Well, big report. Hackers may have stolen credit data from Home Depot. Of course, we've heard this story once before. Now it's Home Depot. They might have suffered a massive credit card breach. And there's been a large cache of stolen data. And that had appeared on black market sites. And, of course, it's been reported that this information that reported about Home Depot, Krebs on Security, they're the ones who reported on Target's incident last year. And they saw some unusual activity. But they're also coming out and saying that perhaps Target's incident from last year is the Russians. Do you believe that?
I don't. You know, I don't doubt the possibility, that's for sure. But when you say the Russians, are we talking about a gang of school kids that happen to be Russian, or are we talking about an official branch of the Russian government?
Well, basically,
you know, it's hard to know sometimes. Are you just dealing with some people who happen to be Russian or happen to be Chinese, or are you dealing with an agency of their government? What do we got here? And I think the answer, again, as you would say, is both.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they'll be blamed and the rest of that. But what are the implications, Melody? The implications are it's going to become increasingly dangerous to trust your wealth to digital cards, debit cards, credit cards, right? They're cracking into these things, and they're not doing it just to have fun. They're doing it to rob people, and undoubtedly they are succeeding to some extent. And what that means is people are going to have to start moving to a medium for paying their bills that is not easily hacked. And that pretty much means a non-digital currency. Now, it'll take a while for this to catch on, but it may take a while for this to catch on, but some people are going to look at this and they're just going to sit back and say, listen, you got to be a little bit nuts. You can't even use your credit card or your debit card down at Target.
And then how much of it is really propaganda?
The whole thing is crazy. It just becomes bizarre. But whether it's true or false, whether the danger in using these digital currency, whether that's becoming increasingly dangerous and unreliable, I don't know. Is it true? Is it false? Is it exaggerated? You know, I don't know what the truth of it is, but I can bet you that people in positions of financial stress are going to sit back and say, I'm not about to get robbed the last $600 I got in the bank account. I'm going to cancel my damn credit cards. I'm going to cancel and get rid of my debit cards. I'm going to start working in cash or at least a check.
Or do you believe that people who have $600 in their checking account don't really care because they know the government will take care of them. Because these people,
well, that's their theory that they're
They'll be the first ones in line in order to accept whatever the government will give them, whether it be a chip in their wrist.
Yeah, maybe so, but you know, we've got a report here. And this is something that touches on this. The U.S. plans to bail in the banks. Federal Reserve Vice Chairman. This was actually from August 11th. Vice Chairman of the Federal Reserve, former Governor of the Bank of Israel, former Chief Economist of the World Bank. The man's name is Stanley Fischer. He delivered a speech on August 11th, 3 weeks ago, in Stockholm, Sweden, where he says, as part of this approach, the United States is preparing a proposal to require systemically important banks, those would be the ones that are too big to fail, to issue bail-inable long-term debt. That's his term, bail-inable long-term debt. That will enable insolvent banks to recapitalize themselves in resolution without calling on government funding. This cushion is known as a gone concern buffer. I mean, the man's speaking another language, apparently. I'm not sure that he's speaking English. But the point, one of the points, there are a number of points here, but one of the points he's saying they want to let the big banks seize the funds. That's the implication, that our depositors' funds that are in the banks without calling on government funding. They want to be able to recapitalize the banks without calling on government funding. That tells us, that implies, it doesn't tell us, but it implies that if the government isn't going to be there to fund the big banks, all right, if they get their buns in a crack, the government isn't going to bail them out. That's what they're warning here. So you got to get it from the public. Well, if the government isn't going to fund this, you were just suggesting that the people with $600 are betting that the government is going to keep their bank account flush. I'm thinking that if they won't fund, if the government is warning that it can't fund the big banks, the systemically important, too big to fail, not going to get money from us, got to get it out of your customers. That implies government's not going to have money for Joe Sixpack with his $600 in the bank. And while you were gone, we just to put this in a little more perspective, while you were gone, we talked about a report that was released by the Federal Reserve where they concluded that 52% of the American people, 52%, can't pay for an emergency that costs over
$400. $400, I know.
Yeah. All right, I didn't know if you'd heard that or not.
Yeah, we talked about it.
I didn't remember if I'd brought it up then before while you were still here or not. But again, that $600, we're talking about people who are desperate, and we're not talking about 10% of the population. Half the country can't come up with $400 cash right this minute. All right? They get an emergency that costs over $400, and they have to sell something in order to come up with enough cash to pay for the emergency, or they have to borrow money from the bank in order to pay for the emergency, or from some friend or whatever. $400. To me, that's one of the scariest numbers I've ever heard. Half the country is just living on the edge. This is almost beyond hand to mouth. You know, this is a terrible situation. Well, it just suggests half the country, in a worst-case scenario, they can't rely on the government to come up with the money to back up to replace the $400 that they had in their bank account. Who's going to do it, Melody? And the answer is nobody. So here's the Federal Reserve telling us we're going to set up a new plan for systemically important banks. And they'll be able to take, and they call it a bail-inable long-term debt. They're going to issue, the banks will be able to issue bail-inable long-term debt. All right? Now, what do they mean by that? Who is going to get the bail-inable long-term debt, Melody? And the answer is the depositors in the bank.
Yep.
Yep.
What they're saying is we're going to allow the banks to come up to the folks who have bank accounts, and we're going to say, guess what? Instead of being able to take the cash out of your bank account, we're going to give you a bail-inable long-term debt document, all right? Which means you're going to get all that cash back, although maybe several years before you do. In the meantime, we're going to take the money and we're going to use it, and we're going to give you this genuine bank bail-inable long-term debt instrument.
Well, the whole thing just gets crazier and crazier. I mean, it's just, oh my God, the implications are enormous. That it's telling us that the Federal Reserve, it's implementing this program to seize depositors' funds. This is evidence that the Federal Reserve believes a financial crisis may be approaching this country that is so severe that, as in crisis in Cyprus back a couple of years ago, the only way to keep the bank solvent is let them seize the depositors' funds. All right, there's the first point. Oh, but what are we? Is it time for a break again?
It certainly is.
Oh, my gosh. I was just getting geared up for a rant a little bit, and now we have to break for some commercials. It's the way of the world, folks. Just when you're ready to scream and shout, you have to take a commercial break. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku-band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, you know, we were talking about credit card usage, and we got an email in, and it says, you know, unlike debit cards, credit cards provide a level of security. It enables the consumer to dispute bogus charges, which is true. The credit card company will take the hit, but we are protected. But for how long? Debit cards do provide unfettered access to your checking account, and you'd be wise in not using them. And I've seen reports and comments is like, yeah, credit card companies will say, even if my card is compromised, they're only on the hook for what, $50 and probably most likely nothing. And nobody is losing any sleep over it because they think that they're protected. Well, I'll guarantee you one of these days, you're not going to be protected. To me, I think it's a bigger picture. You know, and I don't think the hacking, I'm not even quite sure. I read reports a long time ago that the hacking, people's identities being stolen is not nearly as severe as they want people to believe. And it's all about control. It's all about control. It's all about tracking what you do. And a lot of people say, well, you know what? I don't really care if they track me. Who cares if they know I bought a pair of shoes at Macy's department store or whatever. But you know what? How long? Where does it end?
One place it ends. If at least where it begins to end. If your credit card is captured by hackers, and they go out and they spend some money on your credit card, and it's true that you can dispute that order, and you will not personally suffer the hit. The hit will be imposed on the credit card company. How many hits do you suppose the credit card company can absorb before the credit card company says, we have to increase fees on operating these credit cards? We're getting robbed of too much money. The hackers are not just toying with people. This isn't just a little game. They are stealing credit cards and or debit card information in order to use that information to rob people. They get hold of somebody's credit card, they place the order, they get something for nothing. That's essentially what's going on here. They are robbing people. How much robbery can we endure? How many people need to be robbed before the whole system cracks up, folds up, can't deal with it? I don't know the answer to that question.
I think it's far more. I think there's a bigger plan. It's more part of conditioning, and you know what? And a lot of people are very responsible when it comes to their credit cards usage. But why do you think people only have $400 that they can't afford to pay a $400 emergency? It was the beginning of this, you know, I want it now society, the disposable society. I mean, credit cards have shaped the society to some degree to where we are today. It was part of the agenda. It was part of the plan. Credit cards are not good. And they might let you think that you're getting away with something for how long, but you're right. Fees, and eventually it will be no longer. They will want to trade those credit cards in and give you something else. And if you believe in the cashless society, if you believe that we're going to go to where the possibility of chipping and all this kind of stuff is going on, well, then you better have some gold and silver in your portfolio so you don't have to be part of that system. Because I do believe, I mean, I look to gold and silver, number one, as a way to preserve my purchasing power. That's number one. But there's all types of reasons why you own gold and silver, and I believe it keeps you free of their system. It will give you an alternative. It will give you the ability to stay out of that system because you're just not going to be able to walk away from their system if you believe you're going to have to make that choice in the future sometime. If you don't believe you don't have to make that decision, well then, hey, you know, be in their game, play with them, and see how well they treat you.
But if you don't believe that we're going to see a possibility of some sort of a financial crisis that is enormous and systemic, if you don't believe that, you have to wonder, if you think that's a ridiculous idea, why is the vice chairman of the Federal Reserve, is he saying we may have to do bail-ins for the banks? He's anticipating a significant problem. Right? This is not just doom and gloom, you know, hyperbole. He's anticipating a significant problem. It doesn't mean we're going to have the problem, but he's saying, wait a second, we got to get ready for this because we think it might happen. If he thinks it might happen, it's not unreasonable for you and I and everyone in this audience to prepare for that possibility. They're preparing to protect the banks. You folks need to prepare for the same crisis in a way to protect yourselves. We got a caller on the line, Daniel from Toronto. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Al. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Glad to. What you got for us?
I would like to ask your opinion. The whole conundrum of the world situation, the geopolitical events, should we not be looking at that from the spiritual warfare aspect, where it's good against evil, Satan against the return of Jesus Christ?
I agree with you. I think we're in end times. I believe that we are. I won't say we're in end times, but we are fast approaching it if we're not already there. There's a 7-year period that the way I understand it, and I always stand to be corrected, but the first 3.5 years, we wind up actually getting to a point where people say peace, peace, but there is no peace. And then the stuff really hits the fan at the 3.5 year mark, if I'm understanding correctly. Is that roughly correct, Daniel? Do you know?
Oh, yes. I agree with you there. There is a 7-year tribulation period.
Yeah, but it's not for the full 7. We're not in tribulation
exactly
for the
where
full
we
7
are in that
years.
Position right now, I do not know.
I know.
I personally believe in the rapture of the church.
I don't necessarily believe in a pre-tribulation. I don't believe in a pre-tribulation rapture. I think Messiah is coming back one time. I don't think he's coming back for the rapture and then coming back later, essentially at the end of the tribulation. I don't read it as he's coming twice, but I don't know. I can't tell you the truth. I'm just saying I'm inclined to believe we are close to that 7-year period, the beginning of that 7-year period, or we might already be in the beginning of that 7-year period, but the stuff doesn't hit the fan until about 3.5 years in, and then we get into some more obvious overt problems.
I truly agree with that, and I shouldn't maybe not have mentioned about the rapture because it has nothing to do with our eternity as far as eternal life is concerned. I think the Lord woke me up to that not that long ago, and I'm convinced of it, but that's neither here nor there.
No, I understand. You have your opinion. I have mine, and we'll watch
that's
and
right.
see. Nobody knows. Nobody knows the date and the time, and there's a bunch of other parts that are mysterious, and there's debate. There's speculation, and sincere and honest people have differing opinions, and we'll find out. you got to do the best you can, but should what we see today be viewed as spiritual warfare? I believe the answer is yes. There will be wars and rumors of wars, and we're certainly in that, in a period that seems consistent with that. So what do you do here? What do you do, Daniel, if we are here in this period of tribulation or near approaching it? What's the solution? Is there one?
Well, for me, the solution, I think it should be for anyone that has an interest and is a follower of Christ, is trust him and trust his word. Yes, will there be persecution? Absolutely. I think Jesus talked about that in Matthew 24. So do we want persecution? No. But are we true followers of Christ? And I think that would be the essence of my life, that I'm going to have that peace. I'm not getting caught up in the world. I don't have a computer. I don't have the internet. I don't even have television. That's just my choice. I want to be in, just grounded in the word of God and knowing what's going on.
For me, it's stand firm. Those who stand firm to the end shall be saved. That's the verse
correct.
That resonates for me. All right?
Yes.
And that's the Messiah saying, those who stand firm to the end. And from my perspective, our object is even though we face tribulation, we face testing, we need to stand firm to the end. That's the way it works for me, but, you know.
Yes,
I'll bet
that
you
works
there's 100 people out there with 100 different answers. That's mine.
Yeah, I would assume that if we allow the Holy Spirit to teach us the truth of his word, I think he'll give us that discernment and understanding.
I think one of the things about it, you have to understand, I don't anticipate, I'm not arguing that gold is the solution to spiritual warfare.
No.
But there is going to be a difficult time, right? There is going to be a time when people are challenged, and in my opinion, it's going to be easier to get through that under some circumstances and some scenarios. Your probability of being able to get through some of the difficulty is going to be enhanced. If you've got some kind of wealth that is tangible and recognized by people, as opposed to being just flat out broke, you lose all of your currency in the banks and the rest of that sort of thing. How are you going to get food? And if you can't get food and water and the necessities of life, does that predispose you to commit crimes and even sins?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not talking about stacking gold so you can be filthy rich, but there's a point to being able to support yourself through difficult times. You may be able, it may be easier to avoid some of the temptations that would otherwise exist.
No, I we've been listening to Melody's program when Mr. Chapman was on for about 5 years now from Toronto. We've taken the advice with the gold and silver, so happy that we have.
Yeah.
And we feel totally confident that that's what God gave us even from the beginning of time. Right in the book of Genesis, I think chapter 2 in the Garden of Eden, there was gold in the ground. I was going to ask one question, Al or Melody. Is the Shanghai Exchange opening September 26th going to make a difference on the price of gold?
We'll know September 26th.
No, we won't. We'll know on the 27th, maybe. We'll find out on the 27th.
No,
and thereabouts. It's pretty much going to have to. It's going to have to if they want to stay in business. Because, for example, there's a Shanghai Futures Exchange. There's a Shanghai Gold Exchange. My understanding, they're already functioning. There's a Shanghai Silver Exchange or something that runs a, I don't think that's the name of it, but they primarily sell silver. They're already functioning. They have a problem. They are apparently selling physical gold at the prices of paper gold. That's a solution for a market like that. They're going to go broke. They're going to lose their gold. They're playing the fool right now. They've got to get a premium on physical gold. And if they do, then people who want to sell physical gold will see to it that their gold ultimately goes to that market where they get an extra $100 an ounce. Just take it, just pull a number out of the hat. They make an extra $100 an ounce. The physical will go to the market that pays the extra $100 an ounce. It'll go there. It won't go to the paper markets. It'll put the paper markets out of business if they charge a premium for physical. If they don't, then if they just go along with the paper price that's set in New York, guess what? They're going to just clean them out. It's going to be a source of gold or silver that can continue to support the markets, the paper markets in New York or wherever, London. They just buy it cheap from the Chinese, and then we'll use it to back up our sales in New York and in London. So when these markets open up, to my mind, the wily Orientals had better get wily, right? They better get smart. They have to charge a premium for. They're going to have to charge a premium for physical, or they're going to run out of physical.
Yeah.
That's my guess.
I had read at the library on the internet with Jim Sinclair something about the Shanghai Exchange commencing September 26th. A certain branch of it, I assume, and it has to deal with the price of physical gold.
Well, I know they're supposed to be selling primarily physical gold at both Shanghai Gold Exchange, Shanghai Futures Exchange, maybe even a third market that's dealing with silver. I don't know all the details, but I'm just saying my observation, if they're going to make a habit of selling all their gold at paper gold prices, they're going to exhaust. If China's going to back them up, all the gold they've hoarded and they backed, you know, and they've said, oh, we're stacking up our gold in China. If they're going to back that market with all the gold they've stored up, it's going to shift all that gold back to the West again.
Yeah, that's right.
So I look at it. I don't know what they intend to do. I don't know what they plan to do. But from my perspective, there has to be a premium for physical gold. And it's good business for them to do that. Yeah. I think we're about out of time, however, Dan, so we've got to say
really
thank you for your call.
I really appreciate speaking with you.
Yep.
And
we enjoyed your call.
We enjoyed your call.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to thank all the rest of you folks in the audience for listening. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank the producer, and Dan, our caller from Toronto. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got to be a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. We'll be right back.
Almost.